Oh my God, no, not every kid is tied. And no, I agree, not every kid is tied. Maybe they are tight, and we're gonna talk about that today.
If you have a baby that clicks at the breast, makes a sound, that is absolutely never normal.
If I want to breastfeed, they have to be released on day like 3 or 4, or I am done.
It's not gonna, you can't therapy away a true tie.
Welcome back to Healthy as a Mother. I am your co-host, Dr. Morgan McDermott, and this is the show for becoming and being a mother, where Dr. Leah and I share our natural women's health and motherhood guidance that you've been looking for through our fresh, functional, and balanced lens. And today we are talking all about tongue ties, being tight, your baby's having a tight mouth versus a tied, like T-I-E-D mouth, and what's the difference? Why do we care? What even is a tongue tie? What's a release? What is the proper protocol for the aftercare, the before care? What are some of the nuances around when we can't really wait to do a lot of body work before we do the release? What is, in her expert opinion of Linnell King, my absolute favorite IBCLC on the planet, for when to get the release done? You know, when is that sweet window of time where we are taking care of all of the factors the best that we can? And kind of what's the reason why all this is happening and coming about? What are some of the symptoms? So this is really like, if you're pregnant right now, or if you have a little newborn, or maybe you've had a baby tied in your family in the past and you're going to have more children and you're like wanting to do things a bit differently, this will be a very pivotal episode for you to learn so much more about craniosacral therapy and tie releases and ties in general and the way the mouth works and the way that lactation works. Linnell is just such a wealth of knowledge. She's one of my favorite people, and I hope you enjoy the episode so much. Welcome back, everybody. I am here with my most favorite IBCLC, International Board Certified Lactation Consultant, if in case you've never heard of that term before, Miss Linnell King. You are my, like, I really don't even have words for you. Because you've changed my life so many times too with my babies, and I think that your wisdom and advice is amazing. I think you're an excellent lactation consultant, excellent craniosacral therapist, excellent motherhood mentor, all of the different things, and specifically in the realm of, I know you're like getting, don't worry,
I'm red here. Golly, Morgan, that's so nice.
Well, it's really true. And I trust your opinion so much about oral ties, specifically too with kids and babies. I know that this can be a really frustrating topic for some people, or they're feeling a little bit like burnt out or like, oh my God, no, not every kid is tied. And no, I agree, not every kid is tied. Maybe they are tight, and we're going to talk about that today. What is the difference, and who needs to be released, and who can afford not to? Or, you know, what are those nuanced situations where maybe it's a little bit borderline, which is really tough and tricky. Yeah. But this matters a lot because there unfortunately is a lot more kids being actually tied mm-hmm. now in the last like decade, it feels. And so I want this information to get out there. And you and I did a recording number 133, and it's all about the many multitude of root causes for low milk supply, which I will link in the show notes because I think everyone needs to listen to that episode. If you're worried about low milk supply, there's so many myths that we kind of tackle there about that. But then we also talk about, well, how does this end up happening? Because it's not just that people actually truly cannot make enough milk in the numbers that we're seeing of people saying, oh, I just didn't make enough.
Right.
No, it's just not a truth. Okay. And ties are part of this. And so in this episode, we're going to go deeper into that specific side of things, which I know is your expertise too. So I'm so grateful for you being here. Can you please introduce yourself to my audience again, even though we've already had you on, but I want them to hear you again.
Thank you, Morgan. Yes, absolutely. And just right back at you. I think the work that you're doing for moms and families is phenomenal. And being able to put tools in people's homes that they can manage themselves, you're empowering moms every day. And I just want to cheer that on, because this kind of innate knowledge that we as mothers used to have in our communities as women, relying on each other to help our families, has been in so many ways lost. And I love the way you're bringing that back into the hands of families and mothers. So thank you. That's just like such a dear, dear part of what I love about what you're doing. I'm Linnell King. I am an IBCLC. I have a bachelor's in maternal child health. I've been doing lactation a very long time. I started out in the La Leche League so that I learned normal really, really well. It was a good foundation. And then I worked my way into IBCLC work. And then from there, I became kind of tandem, actually, a craniosacral therapist trained through the Upledger Institute. And I can't say enough good about the work that the Upledger Institute does in the world and being able to downregulate people's systems throughout, you know, the world, actually, not just our country. So I think that's lovely. How did I come into this work? Well, I have 8 children, and I had 3 boys.
Yeah, which is something that just blows my mind. I have to stop you really quick, because every single time I come into the office for whether it's body work or lactation work with one of my kids, it's like I think of some situation that happened to me, like, you know, that week or even that day, and I'm like, how on earth would you do that with double the amount of kids I have? I have 4, you have 8. What?
Yes.
You are so amazing.
It's crazy. It's lovely. I wouldn't trade those moments for anything else that I've ever done in my life. I absolutely love being a mom. So I had 3 sons, and then I had twin sons. And then I had my daughter, and then 2 more sons. So my youngest is a senior in high school right now, which is just crazy to me. I'll be done with my homeschooling career. I'll be done with, I have no more children. There, I have adult children now. So I just love it. So when I became an IBCLC, I really loved being able to use the craniosacral therapy as an adjunct therapy with the oral work that we need to do as IBCLC. So that's kind of my history in a quick introduction.
Yeah, well, thank you for that. And I want to just say to anybody who's dealing with ties or breastfeeding issues in general, or any suspected anything that's going on, and also just normalize too for those that are pregnant and this hasn't happened to them yet. While you are pregnant, one of the best things that you can do if you're planning on breastfeeding is to find an IBCLC during your pregnancy, and you can even have an appointment with them. You can have a prenatal, you can have a consultation where you're meeting them, but at minimum call the office and just say, hey, I'm going to be due around August 1st and I am going to be using you guys. So I just wanted to say, hey, introduce myself. And then now you have the number on your phone. Yeah. You've already decided who you're going to call. Maybe they're going to remember you. Maybe they're not. It doesn't actually really matter. It's more just that you have taken off that task from your newly postpartum self, where you're freaking out and tired.
And not alone, you know, in that.
Yeah. Like, you don't want to be trying to figure out who you're going to use as an IBCLC then, because you're probably going to just like pick whoever. And I mean, we're all human, right? And so we make mistakes. There's going to be varying degrees of expertise, and you know, some people are going to be better than others. Some people are going to have a bad rap, like whatever. So you want to ask around in your community, who are you guys using? You know, get on your Facebook groups or ask your midwife or your practitioner, ask your prenatal chiropractor, any of your people, who did you guys use for lactation? You're going to start to hear the same names over and over and over again. And that's going to help you narrow down your search, and you're going to find them and say, okay, now it would be really ideal if your IBCLC also did body work, like craniosacral therapy. I think in the future, that's going to just be like the way, don't you think?
I think I can absolutely hope for that, because having a one-stop spot is what my goal was with trying to put these things together. Because as new moms, we are just run ragged just by the daily trying to get your shower in, and to be able to do both things in one appointment, that was really, really important to me.
Yeah. And it's like, I mean, they almost... Every baby, whether they're tied or tight or not, born vaginally, born cesarean, they all benefit from craniosacral therapy. There is no situation, right? I mean, I can't think of a single situation where you say, no cranial for that baby.
Right.
Like, none. Right? None. Literally none. Because you guys, you have to understand, let's just say, okay, I think this is a misconception too. If you don't know what craniosacral therapy is, I get it. It's a little bit hard to understand. Watch some YouTube videos. It's a bodywork form that is working on fascia. It's working on cranial bones. It's working on connective tissue structures. It's working on a little bit more of a subtle. It's not, you know, chiropractic feels very tangible, where it's like, okay, we're cracking a bone. We can hear it. We can feel it.
Yeah.
Craniosacral therapy, though, if you go get it as an adult, you will feel it.
Yes.
You will feel it. And I don't know how to explain it. And actually, my big, huge 6'5", 220-pound husband, the best body work for him is craniosacral therapy. And he will tell you that unabashedly. His body does not respond well to being cracked and whacked. It just, he won't even crack. Nothing happens. He goes and he gets craniosacral therapy and he's like, I felt like I was, you know, falling. I felt like I was on a roller coaster. Like I could feel my like hips moving around. And so they don't only focus on the cranial bones and sacrum. It's the entire body, but that's just what the name is called. And let's just pretend you're a baby that's being born C-section. You feel like, oh, well, they didn't have any of that compression of the head. Why would they need body work afterwards? Because they're getting yanked on and pulled. And usually there's a lot of pressure placed on the head and the neck in those situations, depending on how they're getting taken out. Maybe they were lodged down deep in the pelvis for a very long time. That was why the C-section's happening. It wasn't really like progressing. Who knows? Either way, the squeeze that is, you know, physiologically expected from a vaginal birth doesn't happen. And so there's things there as well. So no matter what, your baby would benefit.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
And if you can find a practitioner that can do that for you in the office while you are getting lactation advice, while they're teaching you, you know, how to hold and how to position their mouth and their lips and get a really good deep latch. And what is this? And what is that? And da, 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 da. But they can also be working on some really, 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 really common root causes of why the latch might not be good, which would be the mouth is either tight or tied. Then you don't have to go to a separate place. So I think that is, if at all possible, in your pregnant search for this person, this unicorn person, like you are to me, if they can both be an IBCLC and a body worker, or have those types of people in the office, you're gonna just have a much higher rate of success, in my opinion. Because, okay, and then let's get into tight and tied.
Yeah, because what you're talking different. About, I'm just like, oh my gosh, this is so rich and so real. Yeah, absolutely. Let's totally dive in. I love it.
Okay, so let's just talk about the difference, and then we'll kind of go into each of them. What would you say is the difference between a baby that is tight and a baby that is tied, T-I-E-D, tied, oral ties?
Yes. So first, I want to clarify my lens with this a little bit. For the first, this is years and years and years ago. I don't know, over a decade ago. I took 4 years and only treated babies with craniosacral therapy. No tie releases. So I have 4 years under my belt where I was like doing work on these babies, feeling like, okay, every baby is tight, and that every baby coming into the office was tight. That was absolutely true. And I wanted to learn, like, why in the world would I ever send an infant to get a tie release from being tied? And so I did that year and traveled the country and did classes with people who were publishing research at the time. And that research has just grown and expanded. So I think, you know, Morgan, when you were saying, why are so many people experiencing ties now? Like, what is that? Partly, I think that has to do with the lens that we're finally looking through, which is a really well-researched lens where we didn't have that 20 years ago. So when we got a new telescope, all of a sudden we got to see new stars, not because the stars didn't exist, but because we couldn't see them. And so
I love that. But okay, but so do you still think then that the rate of actual ties happening in the population was probably pretty similar 20 years ago? We just didn't have a word for
it? Great question. So I have to ask myself that same question. And while I don't know for sure, I do note that there are a lot of adults today who had a lot of teeth yanked out as kids to make space for the teeth that were coming in. A lot of expanders. We also have an adult population right now with massive amounts of sleep apnea and CPAP use that we have to ask the question, were these issues with airway actually existing years ago, but we couldn't see the origin story for these things? And so I think that we have to just ask that question through a little bit different lens. And now we're looking at research that's finding, gosh, you know, it looks like a lot of these things have been around. Thai has been around for a long time. And what we are is really amazing compensatory beings. And so as humans, we just have compensated for these things in different ways. We now have other tools that we're using as adults, and you know what I mean? So as we talk through that, I think we need to look at that lens a little different.
As we're talking about birth and postpartum support, I want to share an underrated tip with you. That tip is to continue taking your prenatal. Pregnancy and postpartum are the most nutritionally demanding phases of a woman's life. Many women stop taking their prenatal after birth, but we recommend taking it for at least the first 9 months postpartum or the entirety of the time that you're breastfeeding. My favorite prenatal is Needed's Prenatal Multi, and it's the most robust formula that I've seen in the market. It contains bioavailable nutrients in their evidence-based dosages, well above the bare minimum that a lot of prenatals settle for. Their quality standards are top tier with transparent third-party testing, and over 10,000 practitioners now recommending the brand. And now we have the results from their IRB-approved clinical study that confirm the results of what we've been seeing clinically. Women who take the Prenatal Multi have significantly higher blood levels of critical nutrients for pregnancy and postpartum. This includes vitamin D, B6, B12, riboflavin, vitamin K2. Only women in the Needed group reach the adequate, sufficient levels of vitamin D. Vitamin D plays a big role in your immune health, your mood, and your energy production, all things that are really important during your postpartum season. And while there's many different ways that you can support yourself postpartum, continuing to take your prenatal is a really simple, easy way to cover all your bases. It's one of the most impactful habits that we can have, and Needed makes it easy. Learn more about the study at thisisneeded.com/thrive and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 20% off your first order. Yes, healthy mother, like a little affirmation for yourself.
I think you're totally onto something because, okay, if, I'm going to put it in the show notes, but the book Breath by James Nestor does a really good job.
Let me show you. It's right, you know, it's here.
Not, like you have it next to you right now. Oh my gosh.
Yes.
Yep. Bright yellow cover. Mm-hmm. And it covers so many bases. It's really a good one. And it's not a dry, boring read. I was surprised at how quickly I read it, how entertaining it was. But it's talking about all of the different angles of the way that our, you know, just through time, our cranium has changed shape,
yes,
and how our sinuses and palates are changing in a way that is causing this dysfunctional breathing, whether it's at night or during the day, and oral resting posture and all sorts of things. He does mention tongue ties briefly, but he still does. And I think, you know, like nasal breathing, oral breathing, whatever, all of this is such a big problem and such a big, like it was so, it's so sly, it's so subtle. And I think, yeah, 20 years ago, there wasn't as much support for breastfeeding. There wasn't as much like cultural, you know, like, oh, wait, guys, we actually should be breastfeeding if we can. Like, we really need to be doing this. And so if people had issues, they probably just went to formula.
Yes.
And it wasn't, that was it. They didn't think about it again.
Yes. Yes. So it's a wide topic. And I love that we can address it through both lenses. Is this baby only tight, or is this baby tight and tied? Because I will say there isn't a tight or tied. It's a baby who is either tight with their fascia or they're tied and they have tight fascia.
Yeah, yes. And that's my babies. My babies are so tight and tied. And then, you know, the craniosacral that we do helps to unravel them and loosen them even after the release, because I do my releases very early. And I know that this is a controversial topic, and we're going to talk about sort of like the main anti thought people against this idea too. I want to know your thoughts on that, because it's like, okay, well, here's the deal though. There's people like me, if I want to breastfeed, they have to be released on day like 3 or 4 or I am done.
Yeah.
I'm done.
Yeah.
I can't do it. Not like my mental, like I'm done. Like, no, I'm not doing this. I'm doing formula. No, like I'm toast. I'm a pulp of a person. My nipples are gone. They're in my baby's stomach.
Yeah.
They have masticated them off. There is huge gaping holes I'm bleeding from. It is not something that I can wait. I cannot wait for 6 weeks of body work before I get my baby's released. And I think it's really sad how many other cases I can think of where people were given that advice. No, just keep waiting, keep waiting, keep doing body work, keep doing body work. You got to do all the body work before you do the release. Meanwhile, here's this baby like starving, first of all, maybe not gaining any weight. Mom is in incredible pain, is pumping instead, whatever. And it's just like, that's not necessarily right either.
No.
There needs to be a middle ground or an individualization, you know?
Yes, I think that's the key, Morgan, is the individualization, is that being able to have the lens to look and feel and work with the dyad of mom and baby together, and then tease out how do we need to manage this case, because tie release itself is not a quick fix. And so we have to be really mindful of the approach that is taken when we're doing tie releases. I get people in our office all the time who've, quote, gotten a tie release, and they're coming in saying it didn't work. And my question is, well, then let's go back and say, what did you do before? How was that tie released? And what are you doing after for function? One of the things to remember about ties, I think it's a great analogy, is like getting a tie release is like getting your arm out of a cast where you have full mobility, but you have no strength. And so being able to rehab a tongue appropriately takes a lot of work, and it is not a quick fix. And so when we're talking about babies who have ties, we want to be really mindful about all three of those pieces. Also knowing that it is like you're experiencing, a lifelong kind of a thing where tension patterns in the body are often chronic. They find themselves back in those places as children grow, and then there's fascial tension there. So being able to say again, like, I got my baby's tie released, I'm hoping everything's going to be better. Well, maybe and maybe not.
Yeah, and this is unfortunately an area where I have to be really genuine with parents too in talking about, yeah, getting your baby's tie released, especially in the situation where a mom is not having breastfeeding issues.
Correct.
But the baby is tied.
Correct.
And we know that, and that's a really hard tie. I'm sure that's like your least favorite situation, because in mine too, because I'm like, well, now I'm trying to convince you to do this thing, or to have you consider that doing this thing because of the sequelae of their life, mm-hmm. and the way that their face is going to develop and stuff. And still knowing that that does not mean you're going to go get the tie released and now boom, their tongue is suctioned
exactly.
to the roof of their mouth and stuff. Because my 10-year-old, actually, you'd be so proud of him. He, every morning, when I wake him up in the morning, because he's like, becoming a sleepy preteen,
awesome.
I go and I like pull his little chin down still. I'm like, where's your tongue? Like, as I'm trying to wake him up, I'm being kind of like silly and annoying. And he has beautiful, amazing, full, he's got a wider palate now because he had his ALF, although the ALF was a really long, hard journey that I did not love, but whatever. He's had so much craniosacral. He had his tongue released, as an infant, but like we've done so much myofunctional therapy with him. Mm-hmm. And so it's not, he's 10, you guys.
Yes.
This is not a, just, and not all kids are going to need that. Mine, I think, are kind of on the extreme end. I don't know
if you would
agree with that.
That is true. I would say there's that bell curve for sure. And we're going to end up with some of these kids that just struggle a little bit more. Others that like they get the release and it's just like phenomenal. And they're like, what was your problem? It's all good now. Most of us, though, kind of live in this bell curvy kind of a place. And you're right. Like we have so many moms who come in, babies are graining really well. They have no nipple pain. There's no issue there. But there are, infant symptoms that come up over and over and over again. So mom might feel good and their babies are gaining well because they have a really great milk supply. Maybe it's in that first 12 weeks where your milk supply is really normally hormonally protected. And they are living off a letdown that's amazing. They have no issue with weight gain. And yet those babies are still tied, and we see it with other kind of symptomology.
Yeah, like what would you say for those that are curious?
Oh my gosh. So if you have a baby that clicks at the breast, makes a sound, that is absolutely never normal. If you have a baby with extremely blistered lips, that's a big clue. Let me tell you why. The lips are, I have to hold this mic here, but the lips are supposed to rest gently on the breast tissue, right? But when the tongue cannot hold a good suction, they end up with these friction blisters that are just over and over. You can see those cobblestone lips. They're just, it's such a big clue. Another clue is having the tongue coated with a white coating, which is often misdiagnosed as a thrush, and it's not thrush at all. It's the baby's inability to lift that tongue up to the palate, seal and scrape those milk fats off on their own. Babies should have clear tongues. So when they don't, and it's milk fat, then guaranteed, well, okay, you can't guarantee anything, but almost always you'll feel inside that baby and they'll have a very high palate, like you were mentioning before. A high palate is created when that embryology of the tongue isn't able to come and spread the palate in utero. It's tethered down low, and then that palate grows higher. So
yeah, that's something that people, it's hard to understand, but basically you have to think about it. When your baby is growing in your womb, the tongue should be up on the roof of the mouth. And I think some people might think, oh, well, it's going to be pushing it up. That's what makes it high. No, no, no. The tongue, the pressure there actually helps to spread out. So imagine it's sort of like, it is like a, okay, I don't know, like a Play-Doh kind of tent, like a rounded top tent, like a little gnome home. Mm-hmm. And you're going to come out from underneath it and you're going to push the ground up, and it's going to make those edges spread out wide. It's going to make the roof kind of come down towards the ground, which would be like the tongue, right? So we actually need it to be up and suctioned and having that pull and that pressure to form it the right way that we want it to be formed. So you can't widen a palate outside of, I guess, orthodontia without the tongue being able to go up there and do it. Like, no, there is no way to do it. And why does the palate need to be wide and low? Because it's the floor of your nose. Yes. It's the floor of your sinuses and your nose. So it's like, this is where, you know, people who deviated septums, chronic sinus infections, all these kinds of things, nasal problems, airway stuff, it's like, and deviated septums aren't caused by tongue and lip ties, but it's just like, we don't want this, right? Nobody wants to have a compromised airway. Like, there's nothing more annoying than not being able to breathe out of your nose or have chronic sinus infections and things like that because you have these cramped, tight bone structure. But then also, you guys, go look up Google long face syndrome.
Oh, gosh, yes.
Okay? You don't want your baby to look like that. Like, if you can prevent your child's face from forming, you all seen these people out in public. And it's like, wow, it's almost like a pattern where you're like, wow, there's just like some people who have this like set of features that's all the same. So interesting. I wonder what that is. They're not related. They're from all parts of the world. What is that? Oh, well, you know what it is that they're probably tied and they just have this very small jaw, this very small narrow palate. Their whole face structure has not been able to develop the way that it should. And it gives this facial appearance that is, you know, less than ideal, not considered attractive, but more than anything, isn't functional.
Right.
And so it's like, we don't want that. We do not want this for our kids. You want them to have these big straw, this like nice midface, like meaning like kind of where the cheekbones and the nose and stuff, all of that area of the midface. You want that to be nice and pronounced. You want their jaw to be good. You want it to be forward. You want there to be all these pieces of the puzzle that allow for a very open airway.
Yes.
So we don't have breathing issues later. It's not just, can we breastfeed? It's not just, you know, any of this, it's all together. There needs to be like a name for this field. I don't know what it would be. Oral health, airway health, something. But so anyway, yeah, I want parents to understand why this is important to understand and what to do about it. And then for them in trying to decide, well, is my kid or my baby tight versus tied? Like, what would you say? What is the difference?
Yeah. So let's kind of come back to tight, especially in an infant. Mm-hmm. It's a little different than with an adult, just talking about fascia. So I just like have this love affair with fascia. It's so amazing. It's gorgeous. If you look at pictures of it, it's like translucent and has rainbow color to it. And fascia, its job is to wrap all of the bodies. It just wraps all of the muscles, it wraps all the bones, it wraps everything, and it's helping to support our body. So it's made out of collagen and elastin, and then something that's a fluid in our body that's called ground substance. And I kind of like, that's such a strange name, but I kind of like it. It's foundational. It's this groundwork for our fascia that goes through our entire body. Well, one of the things that we know is that there's a couple of different types of collagen out there, right? And so some collagens are more tensile or stronger and less elastic. And that's actually part of why ties are such a big deal. Different people, you and I both have different amounts of collagen in our fascia. And so you might be a little bit smoother than I am in my body or, you know, whoever. Babies are born with a ton, they're just like a blank slate with their fascia. They're supposed to be squishy and juicy and just all of this. But some babies are born with tighter fascia and born with curvature because of tension in their body. Well, if you were to think of a blanket that's laying on your bed and you were to take a little clump of it and twist it up, you're going to see that not only is this part twisted, but you're going to see lines coming out from that blanket that show that there's tension pattern that's going to go long. And that's what happens with this deep front fascial line when we talk about fascia and ties. So maybe a baby is tight because they were positioned in an asynclitic position when their mom, or maybe they're a posterior position, or maybe there's twins in there, or maybe you have a smaller mom and a bigger baby. And you don't, you know, we don't always know all the whys for fascia to be tight in a mom's body, but there, those are some of them, right? And so when the baby is born, that doesn't just instantly melt away. So when you have a baby who has that fascial tension just from positioning or from a birth that's a little bit more challenging, like one with forceps or what you were describing, a C-section baby that really has to be moved to get that body and the head out of the pelvis, those babies are going to be tight. I think about myself when I wake up in the morning with a kinked neck, and it just like, I don't want anybody to touch it, but I want somebody to touch it and make it better, you know? And then after it smooths itself out, I'm good. I don't have something that's keeping me there. But if a baby is tied and tight, then we get a complicated system where there's tension from something else plus this tie itself, or a frenum under the tongue or on the lip, or buccal tissue that is too tight. So a tied situation is one almost always where there's a little bit of both. Again, because this is a deep front fascial line from under the tongue that goes all the way to the toes. So when you do cadaver work, you can actually look at that whole deep front fascial line that goes the entire way, which is why you might have a baby who has a tie, little bit of tension, and you'll see a whole C curve when you lay them down on their back. They'll just kind of turn one way. One of the things that I've learned is that in order to have a really excellent tie release, if a baby has massive tension, if we can get rid of that and help some of the symmetry, we're going to have a more excellent tie release and a more excellent aftercare situation where we can really help guide that tissue. One of the things we can't control is the type of collagen that that baby's tongue tie is made out of. And some of them are a little tighter as they regrow and reform. And some of them are really nice and loose. And that's not the only reason we have different situations in healing, but it's one of them. So I think it's mindful to think about, just like what you were saying, when we have a positioning or if we have a difficult birth or something like that, the first thing that we want to try to address is tension. Because, gosh, if that's all it is, we're going to be able to work on that baby and send them on their way. But think about it. If you kink your neck over this way and pull your head back for a minute and you try to drink something, like swallow, yeah, kind of challenging, right? So if we're asking a baby to do that with tension, it's going to be challenging too. So teasing out the, you know, does this need to be a tie release or not? One of the things I found in my work for those 4 years treating just fascia with and nervous system, that's the other big piece of craniosacral therapy is the nervous system, is that there is always improvement just with the body work. But is it sufficient to support a very functional feed long term? And the answer to that is maybe, but maybe not. So being able to look at that is really important to tease that out. Is this a baby who is just tight? Can we settle that down and send them on their way? Most of the time, yes. But if they're also tied, you're going to see a revisit of symptoms over and over again that have to be supported to do as well as they can, even if it's not optimal. Some parents, you know, don't want to do a release, and that's their responsibility, their family's, you know, conversation. I never want to get in the middle of making that decision for a family. But it's not going to, you can't therapy away a true tie. That is my end game comment on that one. I don't believe you can.
Electrolytes are trending, yes, but they have been in need of our human bodies for all of time. And if you're drinking another popular and delicious salty electrolyte, here's why you should be drinking Relight instead. First of all, have you ever considered the salt source of these other brands? Because most of them just use table salt. Yeah, table salt. You don't want that. Redmond's Relight Powders uses their unrefined ancient sea salt that they mine in Utah. This salt source contains 60 plus trace minerals along with calcium, chloride, potassium, and magnesium in two different forms, glycinate and malate. The minerals that they use in the Relight Powders are all in the appropriate proportions and forms too. The metabolic needs of pregnancy, healing postpartum, and milk making require more minerals than in other times of your life. Pregnancy itself demands huge increases in your blood volume, which takes, you know, more minerals. Relight is the perfect blend to be sipping during your pregnancy or during your labor even, and especially while you're breastfeeding. It tastes amazing, and my favorite flavors oscillate between mixed berry, lemon lime, and the strawberry lemonade. But you can try a sample pack and try all the flavors for yourself and see what you think. Use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 15% on your entire Redmond order. That includes their OG sea salt, other seasonings, bentonite clays, toothpaste, and more. Yeah, and there are people who believe that, and I'm confused. There's this whole side culture that's, you know, it sort of reminds me of maybe a little bit of analogous to the free birth movement, where there's a lot of these like statements that are being thrown out without a lot of explaining the other side or explaining the full picture, or well, what if this isn't successful, or blah blah blah, whatever, where there's this idea that ties can be fully, maybe even that they're like not totally real, or that they can be completely managed by unwinding the baby, unraveling body work, nervous system work, like generational trauma stuff, things like that. And I mean, I don't doubt that there's a piece of an emotional connection that's probably passed down along lines, and that has,
I totally.
And I don't understand that having the experiences that I've had.
Yeah. And I think it's the lens that people look through, because if you were to do a really good job with body work for a few weeks and you ask the same question before and after that time, has breastfeeding gotten better? Is baby gaining weight? Or is baby clicking less? Is, you know, that sort of thing. You're going to say, yeah, things are getting better. But if you don't have the lens to then look at, but is this fully functioning? Am I looking at the things that are needing to change completely for a good milk supply to be maintained for a mother, even after that magical 12 weeks where your hormones are protecting that milk so intensely? If you don't have that, it's not going to be ideal. You know, some people are really okay with saying to breastfeeding families and mothers especially, it's almost being like gaslighting, like, I know, it'll be okay, just wait a little longer, just do the body work a little longer, and we'll get there. In the meantime, let's formula feed, or let's bottle feed, or pump, and, you know, forever. And it's just not true. They need to be kind of, for breastfeeding relationships to work well, I believe they need to kind of be worked on tangentially. Like, let's be working on the breastfeeding pieces and keeping your supply up, absolutely, if that's a struggle for you. But let's also work on the baby and make sure that that baby has a fully functioning get to. Like I said before, and as you know, it's not a quick fix. So the sooner we can start to work on it, it's going to be a little easier.
Okay, and so then, when you did that 4 years where you were only doing body work on those babies, was that because you were intentionally trying to go along with that concept of, no, we don't need to release, we can do all of this body work? Or were you, what was the intention there? Why were you only doing body work?
I was like, I really wanted to know, like, I just didn't know why you would send a baby to go get a a surgery, no matter how small. It didn't make any sense to me. And back then, the research wasn't awesome. It was starting to say, well, some of these things are good, but a lot of these things are not good with releases. And I think that what's happened in this time is that we've had more research on benefit lifelong, because we've had these 20 years, but also we've had like a lot of amazing training that's going into the release procedure itself. And so the releases are getting better. The tools for doing releases are better. I'm incredibly picky about how and who I send babies to for releases. And we can talk about that a little bit. Go ahead.
Yeah. And what, well, and can we also, can you cover like kind of back with that concept that I was referring to of the other sort of idea that is becoming a little bit more mainstream? There's a lot of talk in that world of releases being really harmful, and that you're like destabilizing the entire fascial system of a body because frena have purposes, or they have purpose. And so then there's parents who are fearful that this is going to be negative. And to me, in my experience, I'll just share, the only negatives I've seen of a tie release is that it just doesn't work. It just doesn't do anything. Yeah. Like, it wasn't the root cause. But I've not ever seen anything. I've heard of a story, one or two, that like it was so traumatic for the baby refused to eat of any form, bottle or breast. And I think that is probably extremely rare, but I don't know. I want to hear your thoughts. Like, I do hear, though, a lot of the time, oh, well, yeah, I had my baby tied. I had their release and it was proper. It was with the CO2 laser and they did some body work, but their breastfeeding problems still did not resolve. To me, what I want to say to that is it wasn't the root cause then. It wasn't the issue. There was something else going on, but maybe that's just not the case. I don't know. What do you see?
Yeah, again, I think that's the lens that we're looking through, right? So what was your goal with doing the release? What things were you trying to track that would change? And we watch infants for about 2 months post-release because I feel like that's a good, I can send people out the door and I know that they're going to be doing well. But we look at the, okay, I'll finish this thought and then come back. We look at the research that's happening right now on frenum remodeling, and that we're looking at, it's not just the new frenum, which I want to speak to, is remodeling not just for these 2 months that I'm seeing people, but for like 6 months, maybe even up to a year. So this is a long body change. Why? Because it's so... Think of how the tongue moves every single day with feeding and speaking and laughing and putting things in their mouth as babies. Like, the tongue is so dynamic that the changes that are happening in the mouth affect the whole body and right back from the body to the tongue. So this is a very dynamic healing process. It's not an isolated shoulder sort of a thing, right? One of the things to speak to the families about who are wondering about, well, if we do a release of a frenum, you know, it's supposed to be there. I believe that it's an anchor for the tongue. The troublesome bit is when it's too tight, thick, or short to do a proper lift to the palate to be able to put the breast tissue under that tongue and create a seal and the vacuum that the body needs to have a good milk supply. So I'm going to put my microphone right here, and I'm going to show you something with my hands because I don't have a... Okay, so hopefully you can still hear me. And are we good?
Yeah, we can hear you. And then just describe it for those that are listening audio only.
So here's my hands. My hands are going to be one on top of the other with the back of one hand up into the other part of the other hand. I don't know if that's a good description.
Yeah.
Ish. The tongue is supposed to lift to that palate, like we were talking about, and spread it in utero, right? It's supposed to spread it. But when it's kept down low because of a tie, then this part grows up into that higher palate. So here's this tie, that frenum that's tight. When you do a tie release of a frenum, it turns it into a diamond-shaped wound. That diamond-shaped wound is going to do what it's supposed to do, which is want to reattach. What we need to do is keep that wound open until it can come together this way and form a new frenum. We need a frenum, and it is amazing. The body will do that. It will close the shutters or the curtains and not the window. We want those curtains to come together. During this healing time, the sides of that diamond, when they come together, there's going to be a period of time called a wound contraction phase where it's going to be thick in there and symptoms will come back. So this is often when people will come in and say the Thai release didn't work. And I'm like, well, where are you in the healing pattern? And then it comes together like this, and then it gets taller over time. So we want to watch this whole healing pattern over time. And then,
as a listener of this podcast, you probably like to use natural medicines or supplements to aid in the healing of yourself or your children and whatever process that they're going through, whether that's teething, sickness, sleep support, etc. There's so many brands to choose from to accomplish this, but it's hard to know which ones are safe, effective, well-made, have good practices, etc. So here I am to tell you that Earthly is an amazing line of organic pediatric herbal remedies that can help your kid, like with their fan favorite teeth tamer tincture that my daughter is currently using as she gets her 2-year molars. It can contains clove and catnip to help your baby or your toddler get through the stage of teething feeling more comfortable and able to sleep at night. Who doesn't love a calming nervous system transition helper? I honestly don't know how I would have managed teething without herbs like this for all 4 of my children, and I will use them again with this 5th baby. Earthly also has an amazing line of immune tinctures like their Cough Be Gone blend, their elderberry elixir, which contains 6 complementary herbs in addition to elderberry for the full antimicrobial effect and supporting of inflammation. They also have an adaptogenic immunity tincture, which is more for long-term immune support for maybe a kiddo that's going through something a little bit more chronic. So many of the products from the Earthly line are safe in pregnancy, breastfeeding, and in pediatrics. So you need to head over to earthly.com, check them out, and you can use the code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 10% off your order. So happy healing. Wow. Okay. That was such a good visual too. So for those who've never experienced a Thai release, you know, I've done it 4 times now, so I know exactly what we're talking about with the diamond. They will go in with a little laser and they'll just go back and forth, and they release this tightness of the tongue underneath the tongue. There's everybody, if you go and you look in a mirror and you see something, that doesn't mean you have a tongue tie. That's just your frenum. It's just whether it's functional or not is what we're talking about. So that's where you're going to see this wound area, and it's going to be a big, from like the top of the baby's head is the tip of the diamond, the bottom of the baby's mouth is like the other part of the diamond, you know what I mean? And it's going up and down lengthwise. And so then her hands are coming together on the sides to say, like, we're going to close the shutters or like the curtains are going to come together instead of it just going from the top down to the bottom, like rehealing exactly that way. We want it to become longer. That's the whole point, right? Like, we need to give more space there.
Space, a little bit different attachment place. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. And then it will be because of the way that wounds heal and scar tissue and in for a short period of time, it will have this, you know, maybe it'll seem like it quote unquote did not work because you're like, well, what the heck? Cause it's like very tight and there's all these symptoms coming back. But then she took her hands like as if they were just together, like in a prayer position. And then she shifted them. So like the fingertips of one hand were on like the wrist of her other hand. So it's longer. It's like twice the length. And it's just like, you're going to eventually get more of that function later. And I definitely experienced that with my babies where there's sort of like immediate relief, immediate improvement. And then I don't know when it happens, maybe like a month later, 6 weeks, something like that. Is that when it happens?
It actually happens sooner. So it's typically around 10 days or so on either side of that. But that wound contraction phase, depending on what type of collagen is more prevalent in that baby's fascia, you're going to have a tighter heel for a little longer, and it may take longer to elongate that new frenna. I like this analogy. Imagine that you're running down the sidewalk and you fall and you scrape your elbow up. You have full mobility of that elbow, but darn it, it sure hurts. That's like right after a Thai release, the baby will have quite, you know, some pain and discomfort. But quickly, your arm is going to scab over. And what happens? It doesn't hurt anymore, but you can't move it as well for a while. And so it's the same thing happening with that wound contraction phase where things are like that internal mucousy scab, and then it's forming a new frenna, and then it will get taller over time. So watching the development of different different functional items at different stages during this change is incredibly important. And being able to help parents do some homework at home to help guide that new frenna as it's able to do different functional items so that by the end, gosh, they're nursing really well, you know, and things are going really well. It just takes some time.
Yeah, it's a lot of like home exercises all kinds of different things. Okay, so would you say then, like, as in your profession and what you see, a baby comes to you and you're like, all right, is this baby tight or tied? And I know you also have multiple layers of expertise where you probably have a pretty good idea in your assessment that it's, you know, not in a lot of babies, you're probably like, this is not just tightness, this is also a tie, but let's see what we can do here first, or, mm-hmm. you know, whatever it is. So you start to do some body work, you try to figure it out. Also basing this, of course, this is the individualization we're talking about, alongside mom's symptoms, like, yes. Can she wait?
Yes.
Or no?
Yes. And is a mom emotionally prepared? Because you have to be, you know, it's a cost that you're going to maybe have to pay out of pocket. And it's the emotional pieces of, can I walk through a tie release well with my child? And sometimes you're too exhausted and you don't have the support at home. And the answer is not yet, you know, or no. And so it is multifaceted, that question. So yeah, you're right. When I'm looking at a baby these days, it's pretty automatic for me, but it isn't for everybody.
And so then if you get beyond, okay, this baby, we did a bunch of things, they're not just tight, now we are into the tied phase also, mm-hmm. or, you know, maybe you can even make that assessment in like 5 minutes probably for you because of just how,
yeah.
For some of them, it's just so obvious too. And like, seeing family patterns and things too. It's just like, probably this is what's going to be happening. Well, okay. I was going to go a different direction, but actually I want to not forget this. What would you say is the ideal window of time for someone to get their baby's tie release? Because what I tell people, and maybe you don't agree with this, I'd love to know what you think, is there's like a sweet spot where you want to intersect both worlds of they've gotten some body work, but you're doing it as soon as you can, because the longer that you wait, at least in my experience, the more traumatic it is for the baby, the longer they've had now of learning to nurse with this sort of like dysfunctional mouth. Maybe you're not going to pull your milk supply in very well. Maybe you're in a lot of pain, or you're having recurrent clogs and mastitis, or, you know, they're not gaining very well, or you're just sort of telling your breast slowly over time that you don't actually need that much milk. Like, what, you know, there's like all this stuff. So what do you say? Because people, I hear it a lot. People be like, well, we're going to wait till she's 12 weeks and then we'll do it. And I'm like, ooh, like, to me, 12 weeks seems too late. But what do you think?
Okay. This is a loaded question, Morgan.
Yeah, I'm sure. And, you know, I want to remind everybody. So my son, I had a horrible experience. 2015 was a time when people were not recognizing ties as much as they are now. It was sort of like the turning point year, though, I feel. Yeah. Maybe 2016, somewhere. It's like in the last 10 years. So I was told for the first 3 weeks of his life that he was not tied, and I had no supply, which is so funny to me now because I had an oversupply with him. And I tend to have an oversupply. I have these really small boobs, but I make a ton of milk, and it's just like, that was not the case. So anyways, I was bleeding so much. He was burping up pink from my blood. I had had mastitis 2 times in the first 3 weeks of his life. He was getting fed by donor milk from a friend that I went to school with more than he was drinking my milk at that time. We were able to recover it. He got released at like 3.5 weeks when finally this other IBCLC looked at me and said, you are never going to be able to nurse him with that mouth. He's so tight. And I was like, I was told that he wasn't. She's like, no, look at this. You know, she lifted up his lip. It's like notching his gum line. His tongue was a mess. Like, I don't know what the first one saw, but it's okay. So I waited 3.5 weeks for him, and that was torturous, but I didn't know, but it was crazy. So then with my second baby, she got revised on day 3. Mm-hmm. My third baby got revised on day 4. And then my fourth baby got revised on day 3. And I will always do that because I can't. You know, it's like I literally wouldn't be able to do it. And breastfeeding is so important to me. And I have exclusively breastfed all of my babies. I mean, they've had other donor milk maybe sometimes here and there. But I'm just saying that, like, I was able to recover from these experiences every time and have a long, beautiful breast milk only at the breast. Nope, not like exclusive pumping. You know, I didn't have to do any of that. Although, if I didn't work so damn hard or have so much support from people like you, would very easily fall into that one of those situations because of how malfunctioning they are. So I really get it. But I guess it just makes me sad when people are waiting for so long because I'm like, just do it sooner. What are we waiting for?
Yeah. You know? Yeah. So there's a couple of reasons that I think that families choose to wait a little bit longer. Number one is there's a lot of education in ties that we have done, you and I, and a lot of people, this is a brand new concept and they're like, whoa, I've got to back up and have some education. So what we try to do is do a lot of education along with body work so that people are being educated in ties, not that it's a big surprise at one point. Now, sometimes we just have to work on building a supply up with mom while we're introducing that topic, right? Because again, tie is number one, new to some people. Other families have seen, like you did, one or two or five. I've had families in who've seen six other professionals trying to fix the breastfeeding issue. And they finally find us with the ability to see ties in a different way, you know. And then, so the gaslighting is real, especially with, unfortunately, with most people's pediatricians, if they have not educated themselves on ties. And because it's not something that's taught in school. And the position papers for ties for pediatricians are still pretty challenging because they're not full of the latest research, in my opinion. So there are reasons. However, if we have a mom whose nipples are being eaten off like yours were, we're going to get that. We're going to get them in as quick as possible. And then we deal with all of the fascial tension on the other side. That can be done. It's not a...
Yeah, that can be done. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm glad you said that because some people have this feeling like, no, it can't be done. Yeah. It's like, you guys, yes, you can still do it. And I still do. I mean, I bring them to you for months. I bring them to you weekly for months because they need it, not because they didn't need it. I'm sure there's babies that graduate out of your care for a lot faster, but mine, you know, are unique. But it's like, why is there this such dogmatic, like, no, it has to be done first. Like, yeah, would that be ideal and great? And maybe we can do at least a couple sessions. And yes, it would be better, like you addressed earlier. Like, it would be better if we could do that. And sometimes.
Yeah, not every situation you can do that. Absolutely. Right. But let's take the mom whose baby is gaining well. She has no nipple damage, but baby has a lot of gas. They're super uncomfortable. And we're looking at that baby's body and they're like, you know. Being able to unwind that a little bit so we get a really clear working surface for that release provider. Gosh, if we can take a couple of weeks and do that, let's do it. But I don't say wait till we're 12 weeks. I say let's look at this baby and this mom, see what their goals are. What do they need to understand about ties themselves and the long-term impacts of ties not being addressed and what they have to do for aftercare. Committing to an aftercare routine is intense, and most release providers, they're only watching for is the wound healing well, which is awesome. I'm so glad their eyes are on it. I want that. I can't do that as an IBCLC. I'm not, but I can look at how is that wound healing and how is the function following that wound healing, and is that appropriate as what we're seeing here? A little bit spooky, like, do we need to change up what we're doing? Do we need to, you know, change up the aftercare a little bit? And I would say, in most cases, we can just move the dial a little bit faster for that family to get what they need. So yeah, there are a lot of reasons not to, but it is not every case. And if a family comes in and they're educated on ties and they're having symptoms, what we want to do is get that baby right in as soon as possible.
So if you had to give me a number, what would you say? Like before
week
what?
Way before week 12. Way before. Because, okay, clinically, I do have no research on this. If anybody wants to do some research on this, I'd love it. I have chart notes on it for sure. But I see, let's say the cases that aren't going to present like yours, the ones who are going to present kind of like in the iffy world, like, I don't know, what should we do? I would say that in most cases, we see a huge increase in symptoms around week 7 or 8. And I don't know if it's because babies are growing again and that frenum is staying nice and tight because of the collagen and that deep front fascial line. I'm not actually sure why, but we see an increase there. Gosh, if we can get a release done on an obvious tie where everybody's like, oh my gosh, way before that 8 weeks, it's so much easier.
Yeah, because then you're looking at a family going, oh, it's kind of iffy. I don't know. Oh, wait, now 8 weeks comes around. Okay, now it's really obvious to me we need to do this. Yeah. Now we get it scheduled. Now they're 10 weeks, and it's like, I don't know.
Yeah. Because we want to protect the milk supply when that hormonal protection is kind of done around 12 weeks. We want a baby functioning by 12 weeks, not starting by 12 weeks. So, you know, but that's an ideal world. And, you know, my next, gosh, the sooner the better. You know, first, second week is awesome. I love working on those newborns because, again, they don't have those compensatory patterns that they're learning. They're not gassy and really uncomfortable, which is what we see at that week 5, 6, 7, 8. And we see them being able to protect their mom's supply because their tongue is suctioning up to the palate, pulling down, creating a vacuum for that milk and demanding milk really, really effectively. So, and my next thing, if parents are coming in at 12 weeks, they just barely are hearing about ties and they've been told their baby didn't have a tie or something like that. They're coming in at 12 weeks or 4 months or 5 months. My next thing is please get it done before teeth because you have to work in the mouth, right, to do aftercare. So if we can...
For you, not getting bit.
And the parent, right, to be able to do the tie releases before babies get teeth. That's my next thing. Gosh, if we had some stop gaps, it would be well before 12 weeks so that we can have function really getting into that really great space around 12 weeks. And then my next thing is, gosh, if you've missed that window because you've been, you know, you've had an experience where people have not validated your difficulty and you're just like, I think all these things are adding up. I think this is what it is. Gosh, get into somebody who can take a look and do a really good job.
Okay, but then at that, like, say they're 6 months old, they're about to get their first tooth. Are they doing under anesthesia? Are they doing a regular?
No. So typically, if you have a really good CO2 release provider, which is the only kind of laser that I'm going to recommend right now until there's something better, they do really well. So some moms are pumping part of the time at that point because they are working, you know. So their milk supply is being protected in a whole other way. I just think that before teeth, that's just a really good stop.
Okay, so for some reason I was kind of under the impression that they couldn't do it to like that age of a baby. It's like there comes this time where it's really difficult.
Yeah, it gets difficult. It gets difficult around 8, 9 months and older. So we've had kids in here at those ages and parents still do it. But it's just easier the younger they are. And then after that, usually that 8 or 9 month time frame, practitioners and parents both, we want to push pause till that child can go to myofunctional therapy and do the work they need to do prior to release. So this is an interesting thing. If you don't get it done as an infant, then you're not looking at doing a release until they're 5 or 6 years old where they can be compliant with exercises to prep the body and the mouth, just like what we're doing pre with infants, then do the release and then work with that new arm out of a cast, you know, same thing where you've got full mobility but no strength. We've got to rehab that tongue as a child or an adult. It's kind of the same pattern. So we've got this window with infants.
Yeah, and as you said, like if your ideal would be sometime in the first 1 or 2 weeks, and this is kind of what I meant, what the thought that I was starting, and then I just like didn't really circle the entire thing in the very beginning of the episode talking about like finding your IBCLC during your pregnancy. I mean, there's gonna be people obviously who give birth to babies that are not tied.
Yes.
And everything is great. I don't know who those people are, but
me neither. I'm a very self-selecting population of people.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. You and I don't see those people very often, but it happens. And I'm so happy for you if that's the case for you. But if you are having any level of issue, well, okay, let's say a few things. And I do say this on our low milk supply episode 2 as well. I mean, And if you give birth in the hospital, there is like a notorious sort of, what's it called? Like a stereotype. Yeah. There's a notorious stereotype that hospital lactation consultants are, or hospital like lactation nurses are only really going to be able to help in the cases of normal lactation, normal physiology, and nothing really beyond that. They also have no continuity of care in their experience, which I think is a huge deal because they do not know, because you're going to leave the hospital in 2 or 3 days. They don't know if their advice was true, accurate. They don't know if it ended up being the way that they thought it was going to. And so it unfortunately blunts their ability, but they are good at like saying, okay, hold the baby like this, da 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 da, whatever. But so if you are getting advice that either isn't like helping in the hospital, or they even say things about ties, this is not the person we need to listen to for this situation. And you need to have, this is why you got to have this IBCLC already in your phone, whether or not you're going to use her, and hopefully you don't have to use her.
Right.
But it, you know, but in the case you do, get seen immediately. I mean, I'm talking like have her come to your house day three, or you're going into the office day three of life. You know, your milk isn't going to come in till about, yeah, maybe say day three, four, five, somewhere in there. And it's like, if you're having a lot of pain, there's a lot of difficulty, there's major issues here, damage happening, baby is not swallowing, not peeing, pooping, something is going on. Yeah. You need somebody who has been trained in the pathological side of lactation, which is an IBCLC, is not an LC. Mm-hmm. And it's just a fact. It's just, it's not offending anybody. It literally is just a fact. Once in a while, like here at St. Luke's, downtown, or maybe it's actually St. Al's. Where do those two lactation consultants work in town? They're in a hospital.
Well, there's a whole bunch, so I don't know.
Okay, there's a whole bunch now. Well, but that's rare. I don't feel like that's a common situation where there's IBCLCs in hospitals. But there is sometimes, and that's cool. But you need to have this figured out because, again, let's say if it's ideal to get them released in 1 to 2 weeks, you see them on day three, you have maybe two sessions of bodywork scheduled. Mm-hmm. Also prior to that, you get your ties release scheduled. The time happens like that, you guys. And when you have a baby, a newborn baby, it's like you don't even know what's up from down and right and left. You're like, what the heck is going on? And so I guess my point is this. It just all happens so quick. And it can all go so haywire so quickly. Mm-hmm. And it's such an unfortunate thing if there isn't enough support around it, because it's like and you just like watch it slip between your fingers, like because of these strong hormone patterns that are trying really hard to be like, is there a baby here? Like, are we gonna feed a baby with a breast? Like, is it one baby? Is it two babies? Your body's like trying to figure it out. Yeah. And it's like if you have a vacuum on the lowest suction setting just going, your body's going to only make the milk for low vacuum suction setting. You know, it's a really great thing. I mean, otherwise we would all not adjust to the supply that our babies need. And we would never be able to manage twins. We would never be able to manage the situation in a tragic case where there's a mm-hmm. loss of a baby and our bodies, after a little bit of time, it takes for them to recognize, okay, the baby's not here. We're choosing not to breastfeed too. I mean, I know that people do that too, right? But anyway, my point is that because I watched it happen so quickly for myself, by 3 weeks, you guys, my mental health had completely tanked out. I was a shell, and I remained a shell, unfortunately, for 10 months. 10 months. And I know that that's not the case for everybody. I know I'm projecting. I know I have a bias. I understand these things. And I still don't want it to happen to anybody
else.
Exactly. You know, like I don't think we can be laissez-faire about this. Mm-hmm. This is if we suspect, if we're having symptoms, baby's having symptoms, we get seen right away. We're not like putzing around. We're not dilly-dallying. Yeah. We are like on it.
And I really want to acknowledge that as women who are birthing children, we are really endowed with that mother gut. And if your mother gut is telling you over and over again, something's not right. Please pay attention to that more than whoever your expert is in the room who's telling you something that doesn't make sense. Please continue to advocate for your baby and for you that way, because no one knows that baby the way you do and how you're feeling inside. And I want to just acknowledge, Morgan, you're not the only one who also then has that mental shutdown after having a difficult beginning. beginnings with babies are challenging in the best of cases. Difficulty right off the bat with something you don't anticipate, especially something with feeding where it needs to happen every 2 to 3 hours or more. That can be incredibly challenging on your mental health and how you feel inside. And so continue to advocate for answers for yourself and for your baby, whether it's ties or something else. Always hang on to that for forever. It's so in tune. Always, always, always.
Yeah, thank you for saying that. It really is, you know, and there's so many lessons that have been learned from that experience, you know, with me, and everybody's going to have their own thing, but it's just like, it's so wild how much modern women have to be like ready and armed with knowledge and advocacy and resources because things are just sort of not the way that we had evolved for this all to happen.
Absolutely.
And humans are complicated, yeah, and complex, and there's a lot that can happen. And so this is just one angle. Linnell, thank you so much for coming on again. I have a lot of resources in the show notes and about Linnell too. If you live in Idaho and the Boise area, you can come and be blessed by her magic hands. I will be calling you the moment I'm in labor with this baby. saying, please tell me you can come at some point. Or I will come to you or whatever.
Yeah, because we do the home visits and we do the office visits and we do a lot of telehealth for people who are far away from us, trying to help narrow down your situation, but also get resources in your area. Like, if I can help you find resources in your area, gosh, I'm going to do it. And our team is working really hard at trying to make sure that we find people good resources for especially this craniosacral bit. You may or may not be familiar with it before this podcast. And then also getting really good tie releases and people who know how to do aftercare well. I will say there's no consensus around the world about how to do aftercare for these wounds. You know, for kids and adults, people get those stitched up and the aftercare is very different, managed with myofunctional. But for infant wound healing and for functional care, it just takes someone who's really mindful and has done their homework. So we try to connect you with people who can do that as well.
Is there like a, or maybe you're slowly building it, but like a, yeah, IBCLC plus craniosacral therapist database?
No.
There should be.
No.
Somebody make it.
But I'll tell you what, that has been my dream, to be able to continue to connect the two modalities because I believe that they're better together for this, especially for this issue.
100%. Yes, absolutely. Okay. And then I will also try to put this video that I think was on YouTube a long time ago. It's called Strolling Underneath the Skin.
Oh, yes.
Have you seen that?
Oh, with the fascia? Yes, please.
Yes, about fascia.
It's so gaga, you know.
It's like a mini documentary. I think it's like 10 or 30 minutes, something like that. And it just has these like really beautiful, very close-up videos and photos of what fascia is, how it moves, how it's like a living
network. I think I have
network.
That link. I'll send it to you.
Okay. Would you send it to me? It blew my mind because I did take craniosacral training once upon a time. Yeah. And I realized, you know what? I am not cut out for this. I will go to the experts.
Yeah.
This is not my thing. And I think that you have to be a certain level of maybe like in 30 years when I'm like an adult, because I don't feel like an adult still. But I feel it's like you have to be really, really, really kind of calm and grounded and in tune in order to feel it. And I have moments where I have felt the craniosacral rhythm and I've felt that movement, but it's just one thing where I know that it's not worth my time. It's not an innate thing for me. I'm better at teaching, explaining things, cognitive talking, working with my hands is not that thing. So I'll come to you. You work on my babies and I'll try, but
love it.
Anyway, so I remember watching that video in the training, just being like literally jaw on the floor. Like, what? I knew I'd heard about fascia. I'd done the cadaver lab, but dead fascia is just not the same thing as living fascia.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I was blown away. And I think all of you guys who are nerdy nerdy people like me and you would appreciate it. So I'm going to try to link it. Yeah, you send me the link. It'll be in the show notes too. And Linnell, just, I appreciate you so much. Thank you for your time, your expertise, everything that you're doing as well. And I hope that this episode has been helpful for everybody.
You. And I just wish everyone the very best in their journey.
If you are pregnant or breastfeeding and wondering what you can take if you become ill, have allergies, or get a UTI, you can take my Managing Illness While Pregnant and Breastfeeding course and get all the answers to those questions with my favorite, most effective remedies, ranging from homeopathy to herbs to supplements to home remedies. I cover all of the different things that I think are the most effective strategies for this protected population, which, no, you are not just left in the dust. You don't have to just suffer because you're pregnant or you're breastfeeding when you get a cold, flu, have allergies, or a UTI. There's actually a lot that we can do, and I walk you through all of the proper dosages, the things to think about, and the different strategies and ways that you can combine these therapies for the most effective management. So go to the link in my show notes here for that Managing Illness While Pregnant and Breastfeeding course, or you can go to my website, milkmedicine.com, and find it there. I hope it helps.
In order for others to hear this information, please leave a review with Apple Podcasts. Subscribe and share with a friend who would benefit from this content. Please remember that the views and ideas from this podcast are for informational purposes only and are not intended to be a substitute for medical care of any kind, including the diagnosis and treatment of any disease. Consult with your provider before integrating any of this information into your own healthcare plan. A healthier future starts now, and it starts with you.